Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, November 3rd, 2017. Some residents of Yei Town say killings and abductions are out of control.
There was a pupil killed and also an area chief was killed in Lasupayam. And this brings the total number of people killed to 9. People are dying one by one every day.
And a South Sudanese analyst says this week's agreement between President Kiir and Bashir will not change conditions in South Sudan.
The top priority should have been the implementation of the agreement on resolution of the conflict in the Republic of South Sudan 2015, how to revitalize it and how to make it a successful agreement.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some residents of Yei Town say there has been an alarming rise in the number of abductions and killings. The Yei River State Police Commissioner says police officers are investigating the cases. Daniel Friday Martin reports for VOA from Yei Town.
Yei women sob uncontrollably while viewing a body of a school pupil killed at Haipi's residential area 1 kilometer west of Yei Town. Taban Sarjale Lado says his son was abducted late last month by armed men. His body was discovered on Wednesday in the Dream area west of Yei Town. Lado says he has seen 7 dead bodies of residents who had disappeared for days. Lado says he wants state authorities to protect civilians, especially at night when most of the killings occur, just as it did with the school people whose body was found this week.
This boy was picked on Monday at around 5 p.m. and driving towards the Dream area. The incident happened when I was in the office. His school colleagues and the neighbors have seen what happened right from the time the boy disappeared for good. There are many people disappearing at the Dream area. This is the 7th person killed. Let the government see from what happened from the date of this school pupil picked in the presence of people and killed.
Resident Charity Dudu says a young lady was killed recently and her body was later discovered along the Yei River. Speaking in Arabic, Dudu says the government and the United Nations mission in South Sudan must do more to protect the civilians of Yei Town.
These days, the situation is changing into a different thing. Recently, a school pupil was thrown into Yei River, where her neck was chopped off. We have also seen a school pupil discovered dead. Currently, the killing is cropping up. Let the government stand up and look into such issues. We need to be helped as a civilians of Yei. We have raised a single voice as women in Yei, calling on enemies to come and protect the civilians in Yei.
Mahajub Mohammed, a trader in Yei Town, says one trader was shot and killed at Limbe area along the Yei Lanya Road on Wednesday this week. Speaking Arabic, he says traders in Yei have reported the incident to police and are asking state officials to provide security to traders who mostly travel on the roads to bring goods from Juba.
We have a lot of losses on the road. A truck was burnt and the drivers killed. Yesterday, one of our fellow Sudanese traders was shot dead while coming with the goods from Juba. We have reported the case to the police and we are preparing to bury his body. We are calling on the government to protect us on the road.
Peter Said Morjan is the paramount chief of Yei River County. Morjan says his office has recorded 9 deaths in October alone. Speaking in Arabic, he says President Kiir should address the widespread insecurity in Yei Town.
People are disappearing. I have found out that there was a pupil killed and also an area chief was killed in Lasupayam. And this brings the total number of people killed to 9. People are dying one by one every day are some of the dangerous things. I am calling on the president to listen to the crisis of the people
of Yei.
Yei community leaders are appealing to the African Union to establish a hybrid code for South Sudan to try cases of human rights violations across the country. Yei River State Police Commissioner Yowasa Lojang Kamba confirmed the number of killings to VOA. He says his office is investigating the incidents and will bring the perpetrators to book.
The pupil from Kanjoro Primary School by name Richard Lemi Christopher was abducted by an armed man yesterday on the terrace between Limbe and Koya. Driver by name is called Ahmed Muhammad was actually killed by a man on the road from Juba to Limbe.
Lojang urges residents to cooperate with the police by providing information to fight corruption in the town. Thousands of residents in Yei River State fled to the neighboring Uganda and the Republic of Congo when a fresh wave of fighting erupted in July 2016. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yei.
Sudan and South Sudan signed many agreements yesterday aimed at reviving the cooperation agreement the two countries signed in 2012. South Sudan's information minister says the recent agreements will improve relations between Juba and Khartoum. But a political analyst says these agreements will not change conditions in South Sudan. Wake Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
Upon returning to Juba from Khartoum yesterday, South Sudan government spokesman Michael Makwe says several memorandums of understanding were signed between the two leaders on the joint political and security mechanism.
They signed the establishment of crossing points or corridors that will be established within 1 month up to the end of this month or up to early December. Crossing points will be open along the South Sudan borders, and it is agreed that they will continue to open them up to whatever number they want, but for the time being it will be up to 11 crossing points.
Makwe says the government of Sudan and South Sudan also agreed to demarcate the border and establish a buffer zone which will clearly identify the border between the two countries ahead of a demarcation exercise. Makwe says those efforts should help curb insecurity along the border.
It was mentioning that we have five claim areas and five disputed areas and four claim areas along the borders. So it is agreed that we continue with the implementation with the demarcation of the borders in the agreed areas. Meanwhile, we continue to negotiate on the other disagreed areas.
Makwe also says Presidents Kiir and Bashir agreed on how to pay the pensions of South Sudanese civil servants who worked in Sudan before South Sudan became independent in 2011. The cooperation agreement was to resolve post-secession issues that Juba and Khartoum failed to implement within the period of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement signed in 2005. James Okuk, a lecturer of political science at the University of Juba, says the agreements signed on Thursday will not change the current situation in South Sudan.
The top priority should have been the implementation of the agreement on resolution of the conflict in the Republic of South Sudan 2015, how to revitalize it and how to make it a successful agreement that can secure an environment of peace in South Sudan so that people go back to the normal situation. That would have been the priority. Then after that, he would have talked of implementing those cooperation agreements after securing the peace. That would have made sense had they gone with that approach.
Okuk says the way things are, South Sudan will not be able to implement the 2012 cooperation agreement.
It is difficult to implement the cooperation agreement between Juba and Khartoum in the context of war in South Sudan. It is only possible when there is peace in South Sudan.
Officials from Sudan and South Sudan have repeatedly accused each other of supporting rebels in each other's countries. In the past, Khartoum has accused Juba several times of supporting the SPLNOP fighting Sudanese government soldiers in Blue Nile and southern Kordofan. Juba has also accused Sudan of supporting rebels loyal to former first vice president Riek Machar. Sudan and South Sudan signed several agreements on trade, border issues, and freedom of movement between the two countries 1 year after South Sudan became independent. Both countries reneged on the issues they agreed to implement in the 2012 deal. Mr. Kiir told President Bashir that will not happen this time around. Wake Simon Udo, VOA News, Juba.
Soldiers accused of raping international aid workers at the Terrain Hotel last year appeared weak and malnourished in court this week. A civil society activist is calling on military officials to respect the rights of the soldiers who are on trial for charges of murder, rape and looting. Dimo Silva Aurelio has the story for VOA from Juba.
Taban Keystone, who works with South Sudan Civil Society Network, says if more suspects continue to die because of the poor conditions in detention, it could jeopardize the outcome of the case against the 12 soldiers. Most of the suspects looked weak and some were limping as they entered the military court this week. Keystone says military officials must respect the rights of the suspects while they are being held in detention.
If they are under detention in the military facilities, still they should be accorded the rights that each and every human being has to get. Unfortunately, that one of them has already died. It will also affect the legal process, because if the key suspects are not longer there, if they are dead, then the case has to be closed.
Military judges are hearing testimony from the 17th foreign eyewitness in the Terrain Hotel case, who testified from offices via video hooked up this week. Keystone says the military court and the defense lawyers must make sure that the remaining suspects are healthy and fit to appear in court.
So the prosecution side should actually take responsibility to ensure that the suspects in custody are well treated. Those are rights that are accorded to each and every human being, the basic rights like the rights to life, the rights to food, the rights to health, should actually be accorded to these people when they are undergoing their trial process.
While Keystone says the rights of the accused soldiers must be upheld, he praised the military for trying the suspects in a court of law, saying it should send a strong message to South Sudanese Army.
It's ensuring that there's accountability for perpetrators. This provides a deterrent for perpetrators not to continue. And actually, the military is a very highly disciplined profession, you know, and if the military continues to provide such kind of services, then we can have a very professional army.
Military officials say they are struggling to feed and provide health care to the suspects in the Terrain Hotel attack. Deputy military spokesman of the South Sudan Army, Colonel Santo Domingue, says the military is providing the suspects with what he calls fair treatment.
Jail is always jail, and jail is not a beautiful place for a human being to live in. And this is why the SPLA judiciary is trying to, you see, enhance the process of the judgment so that everything is decided at the end of the day. The court has also have the same observation and on the same concern, and it has already tackled it with the with the higher command of the SPLA, and the CDF himself has taken note of that, and people are working on it, at least to improve. And now the command is working on that to improve the environment within the custody, and at least to improve their feeding, and at least I think one doctor has already been identified, you know, to keep an eye on their health from time to time.
Luka Akechak, the commander of the group of soldiers who are on trial, died while in military custody a little over 2 weeks ago. The South Sudan Army revealed his death several days later. Akechak's cause of his death has still not been revealed to the public. Colonel Domich says it is up to the prosecutors to establish the cause of his death. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, aid workers say it's not safe to return to Pagak. Find out more when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how would you describe a comfortable life?
It's just being free and well in a way you are. Just like if at all someone feels good with only eating lunch or eating local food, not like someone who might be eating chicken. So it depends on what you feel, what you have, what you can accommodate.
I think a comfortable life is that life where you're well off, like financially, you have everything that you need, and when we come to health, your health is good.
I find comfort in being able to meet all my financial needs. That's why I find comfort. If you're able to pay your water bill, you're comfortable. Then on the other side of health, if you're healthy, you don't have any disease, I feel you're comfortable.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The governor of the newly created Maiwut state, who is in Juba at the moment, claims that his government is in full control of the entire state, including the former rebel headquarters of Pagak. The governor is asking humanitarian organizations to help residents affected by the recent fighting in the area. But aid workers say Maiwut is still not safe. Nabil Biagio has this report for VOA from Juba.
Governor Paul Roach, who says he's in Juba for the swearing-in of his deputy, will be back in Maiwut shortly to form a new government. The governor says, after intense fighting with rebels loyal to former first vice president Riek Machar, the government now controls all villages in the state.
The area is secure. We have started market operation as is normal because Pagak is one of the border towns bordering Ethiopia. The Ethiopian traders, the South Sudanese traders, they have come back to town. So market is huge. Then people are coming as far as from the other part of Ethiopia to come and buy what they want to buy in Pagak.
Roach says healthcare services are now available in his estate, but it is not clear who is providing the services. South Sudan in Focus could not independently verify claims by Governor Roach that all is well in Pagak.
We have drug supply from the Ministry of Health. We have opened up an hospital. We have people now getting treatment for free, so the life in Pagak is back as normal. We are receiving a lot of visitors from Juba. Some NGOs are even coming in.
Roach says humanitarian organizations who had been operating in the state should return to provide food to residents who are heading back to their villages.
We are receiving citizens from Ethiopia who were displaced by the conflict, but now they have decided to come back home voluntarily. But there is a gap that they are not getting food and non-food items from any of the NGOs on the ground.
Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel, the deputy spokesman for the SPLA in opposition, disputes Roach's claims. He says rebels loyal to Machar still control the center of Maiwut.
They are at the bridge and they are at the barracks, our former barracks. They are there. I can't deny that. But we are just close to them. And we're in control of Maiwut center.
Gabriel says it is not safe for civilians and oil workers to return to the area.
If they're in Pagak and we're in Maiwut, how safe is it for them to call civilians to come back? So I advise them to remain wherever they are and they come back later.
Humanitarian officials in Juba who did not want their names to be mentioned for fear of government reprisal told South Sudan in Focus that Maiwut state is still not safe for aid workers to resume operations there. Thousands of families are trapped in ongoing fighting between government soldiers and SPLA-IO fighters loyal to Riek Machar. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
The UN Refugee Agency is calling on governments to grant basic rights to citizenship to millions of stateless people who suffer discrimination exclusion and persecution. The UNHCR is making this plea on the third anniversary of a 10-year global campaign to prevent, reduce, and eradicate statelessness. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA at the launch of a new report in Geneva on the world's stateless minorities.
The Rohingya represent the largest stateless minority group in the world. Although they have lived in Myanmar for generations, the government does not recognize them as citizens. They are forced to live on the margins of society and are denied the most basic rights enjoyed by Myanmar nationals. Hundreds of thousands of Rohingya have fled to neighboring Bangladesh to escape violence and persecution. The UN Refugee Agency reports there are more than 3 million stateless people around the world, with about 75% of them belonging to minority groups. The agency's I Belong campaign to end statelessness highlights the reality that these individuals do not belong anywhere. Carol Batchelor is the UNHCR's International Protection Division Director. She says stateless people are among the most bereft.
If you live in this world without a nationality, you are without an identity, you're without documentation, you're without the rights and entitlements that come, that we take for granted, even just being able to gather here today, having a job, having education, knowing that your child belongs somewhere.
Progress has been made in reducing statelessness since the I Belong campaign began 3 years ago. Thousands of stateless people have been granted citizenship in places such as Thailand, Central Asia, Russia, Kenya, and West Africa. But the job is far from over. The UNHCR urges all states to facilitate naturalization for stateless minority groups that fulfill certain residential requirements, grant citizenship to children in the country of their birth, and eliminate laws and practices that discriminate against people on ethnic and racial grounds. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Malawi may not be what comes to mind when you think about kung fu movies, but four young acrobats in its capital, Lilongwe, are out to change that. The trailer for the first locally produced action flick, The Town Monger, has been generating buzz online and drawn interest from regional cable distributors. The film will premiere in Malawi next week. Lamek Masina has the story for VOA from Lilongwe.
The buzz started soon after the director posted the film's trailer online. Dennis Imani is the manager of the Kufewa Acrobatics Group.
It's not what we expected, and we've been overwhelmed by the response. And we have taken, I think, some time now just to sit down and trying to re-strategize, like, okay, where do we go from now?
Kufewa Acrobatics is a group of four school dropouts from the Area 36 township in Malawi's capital. The self-taught acrobats learned their skills by watching Jack Chan movies and videos of Cirque du Soleil. Abdul Rashid Shaib is a member of the group. He says at first they performed around their neighborhood. After the positive response, they started performing in townships, performing in the streets. In the process, people would give them money for each performance. Making their own movie seemed a natural progression. In 2015, they embarked on The Town Monger. Alfred Hambali, another acrobat, says the film tells the story of the challenges they have faced. Hambali says many people, even their own relatives, said that what they are doing has no future. But he says he could not back down because he had a vision, and moreover, these are the skills which God blessed him with. The 82-minute movie was filmed using a borrowed camera and a borrowed iPad. The young men leap, kick, and battle their way through the streets they know well. The action movie got mixed reviews at its first local screening to journalists. Shadrick Galukusha with Worldwide Media was there.
What has impressed me the most is the setting, as in at the beginning when the movie was being set, it wasn't just linear.
Gertrude Abudu with Malawi's Rainbow TV sees things the team can improve on if they do more films.
It never had a lot of dialogue that they can really grow on. It never had a lot of female actors. We only saw one female actor that we can also definitely grow on.
Several regional TV networks have expressed interest in buying rights to the film. It is entirely in the local language, Chichewa. Producers are busy adding English subtitles. The four young men are preparing to stage live-action performances of the town Monga, and they hope to one day perform abroad. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Lilongwe, Malawi.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. People in Yei Town say they're seeing a dramatic jump in the number of killings and abductions in Yei. The Yei River State Police Commissioner says authorities are investigating. On Wednesday, the body of a school student from the High Peace residential area was found about a kilometer west of Yei Town. Taban Sarjal Ladu says his son was abducted late last month by armed men. He says he saw seven dead bodies of people who had disappeared over the past few weeks along the outskirts of Yei Town. Ladu and others say they want state authorities to protect civilians, especially at night when most of the crimes occur. Resident Charity Dudu says a young woman was also killed recently. Her body was later discovered along the Yei River. Dudu says the government and the United Nations mission in South Sudan should do more to protect the civilians of Yei Town. The leaders of South Sudan and Sudan signed numerous agreements yesterday to revive the cooperation agreement signed in 2012. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makuei says the agreements will improve relations between Juba and Khartoum. He says President Karim Bashir signed a deal to establish crossing points and quarters that will be established within about a month. Makuei says both governments also agreed to demarcate the border and establish a buffer zone, which will clearly identify the border between the two countries ahead of a demarcation exercise. The cooperation agreement was meant to resolve post-secession issues that Juba and Khartoum failed to implement within the period of the comprehensive peace agreement that was signed in 2005. University of Juba lecturer of political science James Akook says the deal signed yesterday will not change what is happening on the ground in South Sudan in terms of achieving peace. And finally, soldiers accused of raping international aid workers at the Terrain Hotel last year in July appeared weak and malnourished when they were in court this week. A civil society activist is calling on military officials to respect the rights of the soldiers being tried on charges of rape, murder and looting. One suspect died while in detention last month. Taban Kiston, who works with South Sudan Civil Society Network, says if more suspects continue to die because of the poor conditions in detention, it could jeopardize the outcome of the case against the 11 soldiers. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Sot Al Huria by Egyptian activists.
نزلت وقلت أنا مش راجع وكتبت الدم في كل شارع سمعنا اللي ما كانش سامع واتكسرت كل الموانع سلاحنا كان أحلامنا وبكرة واضح قدامنا من زمان بنستنى بندور مش لاقي مكاننا في كل شارع في بلادي صوت الحرية بينادي في كل شارع في بلادي صوت الحرية
We've been listening to Egyptian activist with the song Sot Al Huria. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We want to hear your comments about our show. Drop us a line at southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on our Facebook page, South Sudan in Focus. Join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.